Hi, welcome to Conversations on Public Health. I'm your host, Prachi. Join me every week as I travel across India, speaking to folks who are solving massive public health challenges facing our country and the larger developing world. Solomon, a very welcome to our show. How are you doing?
I am very fine.
So I'm very excited to have this conversation with you today because this conversation takes us across, you know, Indian borders to, you know, a country of such great significance, which is Nigeria. Maybe we can just start with what kind of diseases affect Nigerians, especially when it comes to, you know, infectious ones.
All right. So once again, thank you for having me. Nigeria is a country of interest when it comes to the issue of infectious diseases. We have been at the receiving end of, you know, outbreaks, both national and subnational level. And diseases that have been of interest to us are as common as malaria, as common as typhoid fever, hepatitis, HIV, and then most recently, that has developed into a national challenge is Lassa fever. You will remember that Lassa fever, for example, was first identified in a village in Nigeria. The village is actually called Lassa. So the virus was named after that village, and that was as far back as 1969. And so Lassa seemed to be an indigenous, you know, disease, as it were.
I've never heard of this particular disease. I don't think anyone in India gets it, or at least it's not common in India. And how many experts on this disease are even there in the world, right? And you're probably among the very few.
Very well. You see, I had to laugh when you said it, because I have also faced a similar embarrassment even within Africa. The first time I went to make a presentation in Kenya, we had some students from South Africa, you know, and other places. And I forgot to mention that because of the interest that, you know, the Lassa fever has generated, my PhD was funded by organizations outside of Nigeria, Kenya, and US, because they Yes, they found that it was going to be a very important study. So, in one of those meetings we're having in Kenya, every scholar that they were funding was to make a synopsis of his work, and I stood up to talk about Lassa fever, and almost everybody there was saying, you know, they have never heard about the virus, and I was like, what? You know, so just like I started from the beginning, it was a virus that was identified in Nigeria in 1969, and because of, you know, less attention, not much has been spoken about it. We have not fully dug into it to talk about its ravaging effect, as it were. So right from that time till the early 2000, there was no much around its diagnosis. And being that it was, you know, it is a highly infectious disease, even more deadly than COVID. The only thing is that the means of transmission is not, you know, through the air. It is rather through contact or through the bites of, you know, a certain species of rat, which is called the Mystomys natalensis. So it is a multi-mammate rat that is the reservoir host of this virus. that
Okay.
it lives both in the bushes and then in the homes, especially during the dry season when food becomes scarce in the bushes, and you know there is bush burning too that scares
Right.
them into the homes. So when they come into homes, they
Right.
defecate, they urinate on grains, and you know when humans come in contact with it through a broken skin, they get infected. And
Right.
the classical presentation is that infected persons begin to bleed from everywhere: nose, mouth, eyes, anus,
Oh my
everywhere. And that's, you
Okay.
know, is when there is a multi-organ involvement, and eventually they begin to die. So it's
Oh my
such,
God,
you
this.
know, a huge challenge. And up to now, there is no vaccine. So our people are asking, why is COVID giving such a special place in vaccine
And
development
not
than,
la the
yes,
last
last
fever.
fever? Yeah.
Can you give us some statistics around Lassa fever? How many people get it every year? How many people survive it? What kind of death rate is this? What kind of problems do survivors face?
Okay, so the literatures have it that as much as 500 to 700 people get infected of Lassa every year in West Africa alone. 500 to 700,000 people. And out of this
Oh my God.
number,
Okay.
out of this number, about half of them die of the disease. But
Oh.
yes, the other aspect to it is that it is not everyone that, you know, gets infected with this virus that, you know, progresses into classical Lassa fever, right? Meaning that
Okay.
Up to 80% of the people are able to, you know, recover from it, but as much as 20% would progress into classical Lassa fever, especially in the absence of treatment. So my
Okay.
study was to dig deeper to find out in the genetics of the people, especially the human leukocyte antigen genes, which, you know, play roles in
Right.
the immune system.
Right.
Yes. So I was trying to see the genes that, you know, enable the over 80% to recover on their own, and what genes the other people are lacking, especially the
Right.
yes, the group that progresses into classical situation and eventually die. And of course, the essence of that is to find out. Yes.
Right. What were your findings after your study? What did you find out about the genetics of people who were not able to survive it?
Very well. So in the genetics, it is clear that, you know, there are certain alleles that are presented on the chromosomes of the survivors. Now, those alleles have been characterized as protective alleles. So, meaning that those people, with the help of those genes, they are able to mount up a more stronger immune response. So, the essence of the study is to see if we could, you know, leverage on the, you know, the alleles to either develop a prototype of that, so as to use, you know, in the form of vaccine to administer to the general population, so as to strengthen their immune response against this virus. So basically, that was where my PhD stopped, and I'm hoping that when I go for a postdoctoral study, I should be able to now begin trials, you know, developing those
Okay.
the pro the prototypes and begin to do clinical trials.
So what does vaccine development for Lassa fever look like? As in, where are we in the cycle of, have we developed a vaccine? Have we secured funding for research? Where are we headed?
Yeah, so that is one area I am desperately looking at to get support and funding towards that. Like I hinted in the beginning, part of what is hampering our response to infectious disease in Nigeria is that we do not have infrastructure for vaccine development and vaccine production in country. Almost all our vaccines are imported. So some of us that are having this interest in vaccine development and all of that, we are forced to look outside of the country to see where we can get collaboration and have, you know, some of these innovations, you know, tried out. So hopefully when funding comes, the focus I am looking at is the issue of reverse vaccinology. Now, in that process, just like we have laid our concerns to the fact that COVID is mutating and mutating and mutating, and that may frustrate, you know, even the vaccines that have been developed. You understand that it is also one of the reasons why vaccines against HIV have delayed, even similar with the Lassa. So reverse vaccination, I am looking at the fact that we will now focus on the human genes, not the virus. Right. That's why I into checking the genetics of humans to see what they have in, you know, that is enabling, you know, a good percentage to fight off this virus so that we can, you know, replicate or generate a prototype that when given to people, it serves as a substitute to that part of the gene that they lack. And then it will begin to work in that, you know, process. So reverse vaccinology is something that when it comes to fruition is going to solve the naughty challenge of, you know, microorganisms evading either therapy or vaccination because of their ability to mutate. So we want to come up with a way of, you know, leaving out the organisms while we focus on the genes of, you know, the host, and then, you know, we do things that will modify them in a way as to strengthen their response against the infectious disease. So of course,
so what you're saying is that we must, because viruses mutate very quickly,
yeah,
maybe a better way to go about it would be to just look at the genes of people who survived it naturally,
very well,
see what they have, and then try to incorporate that into the people who don't have it.
Exactly, exactly. That's the approach.
So when you call it reverse
vaccinology, in this sense, you are looking at, you know, the other side, which is the host rather than the infectious agent. So that was why when you were talking about the, you know, Vaccine Institute in India, I became interested that could that be my next destination for collaboration.
What are funding challenges for Lassa like, you know, I understand that with a lot of diseases that happen in the developing world, even in India for that matter, even like let's say in Africa with Ebola, the kind of funding and interest it attracts is very news grabbing, but it never attracts what it needs, which is money to solve the problem.
Yeah, so you see, our issue here has been that we, the professionals, we have been talking on top of our voices. We have been saying, support us so that we can, come up with inventions that will bring us out of the woods. But our government, sees things in a different way. They prefer to, throw the money outside. They prefer to buy vaccines rather than to encourage us to develop that. There are many times we have come up with statistics of how much government here has spent on vaccine importation, in the past 10 years. And of course, that money alone is enough to set up vaccine production labs in all the 36 states in Nigeria. But of course, we don't even need them in all the 36 states. We only need like 102. And we have told them that there is a lot of foreign exchange that will even come with, our country developing some of these vaccines. Now, you understand the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine that was developed in the U.S., the lead researcher there, is a Nigerian. He schooled here in Nigeria. He started work here in Nigeria. But understanding the terrain, he realized that he may not achieve his dreams here. So he decided to move to U.S. And there he was able to make his landmark. So it's not that there are no ideas here. The ideas are here. The passion is there. But the enabling environment has always been the challenge.
It was a problem with India for the longest time until the government, took concrete steps to say no, because we're so many people, we can't afford to buy vaccines. We have to make our own vaccines. But I think it takes a lot of political will to do something like that. On to my next question. How has the Nigerian society and how has the healthcare system dealt with the treatment of people who get the Lassa fever?
Yeah, so for now, especially in places you want to call the wetlands, that is a place that are always coming up with infections. Before the incoming of COVID, there were, more like treatment as the centers. And they were like makeshift isolation sites wherein the people would be kept there, monitored and treated. But like I stated,
right.
Yes, we have kind of upgraded with the coming of COVID. Coming of COVID too came with a lot of needs for, establishment of isolation sites. So what is done now is that part of the issues with Lassa is, the issue of high temperature. People that are infected, they present with, very high high temperature
along
of
the
up
bleeding,
to
you're saying.
Up to 42 degrees and severe headache.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so then fever.
And you're saying all of this along with bleeding, external bleeding.
Yeah, the bleeding comes at a terminal stage. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But from first presentation is, a spike in temperature, headache, fever, and then sore throat and abdominal, cramps.
How does it spread in humans?
So within the human population, it spreads through contact. Now, if someone is infected and happens to touch another person, as soon as the virus gets to be deposited either in the mouth, the nose, the eyes, or any part of the skin that is broken, right, the virus gets implanted. So yes, hospital circulation, which is nosocomial infection, is very high. Yeah, so yes, we have had a lot of of cases where health workers got infected, not knowing that the patients they were treating were Lassa fever patients. Then the other, the other means of transportation, the other means of transmission is the one I talk about, where you know the reservoir host plays, plays a role. You know, here a lot of people are farmers, so when they harvest their grains, at times they will sun dry them, either on the highways, then rats can just sneak in from the bushes, you know, eat them, defecate on it, urinate on it.
Right.
Later, people come to pack them. You know, eventually, in the process of packing, you raise some aerosols. You won't know. So if you sniff it in, or you have to have had contact, you know, with your mouth or with any part of the broken skin, infection would be initiated.
Right. So, you know, transmission rate, infection rate is the number of people that one person infects.
Yeah. So, it depends on how mobile that person is. Right. So,
right. Of course.
If that person is in isolation, of course, it is going to be limited to where he is. You know, just like I have said, it's not an airborne disease. Right, so it is limited to contact. So long as the person is mobile, so long as the person is having contact with people, of course, you can guess the number of people per day the person can have, you know, association with, and in the process, he will end up infecting them.
Are there outbreaks of the disease? Is it something that happens in a particular season every year?
Very well. The disease is mostly seasonal. Seasonal in the sense that within the months of November right down to April, it is usually at its peak. Based on the reasons I have given earlier, the rodents are migrating from the bushes that have been burnt into the homes, also in search of food. So the proximity with humans is high, you know, following that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also important to note that much as that has been, you know, the picture previously, in recent times we have been beginning to see that Lassa infections are happening during the rainy period, right? Between the months of May right into September. And some of my findings from my research have tend to give reasons to that. Before now, you know, there was more like a geographical demarcation, you know, for the lineages of the virus that are circulating in Nigeria. Before now, there were three geographical niches, you know, which were exclusive for, you know, various lineages. There was the there was one in, you know, in the northern part, then one in the central part where we are, then one in the southern part. Now, the northern part was said to have, you know, lineage one, whereas the central part was known to have lineage three, and then the southern part was known to have the viruses belonging to lineage two. But one of the discovery from my work was that I was able to come up with viruses from lineage two, which ordinarily they should be restricted to the south. Now, we are doing a further study to find out if those the migration across the epidemiological sites has now become responsible for, you know, the season-long outbreaks we are beginning to have. And from last year, when we did a further study, we found out that most of the people that were coming down with the disease, especially in the central part of Nigeria, the viruses belong
right.
to lineage 2. So there is that need to, you know, dig deeper to find out what the viruses in lineage 2 have that is making them to perpetuate their stay and infectivity even within the so-called off-season period of the outbreaks.
Lineage 2 was in the southern part.
Yes. Lineage 2 was in the southern part.
So how are we seeing it in the central part? Is it because of migration of people?
Yeah, part of what we have been able to attribute to it is issues that have to do with the reservoir host and then the movement of grains, food stuff,
okay,
from one part of the country to another. You know, here we have a lot of people that consume bush meat. We call it bush meat, right?
Okay.
Yes. So the bush meat now,
what is bush meat?
So you go to the bush, any wild animal you catch, it becomes a game you prepare and eat. Right. So hunters,
okay.
Yes, hunters used to do that, provide source of protein for their family. But it is now a business, right? The big time hunters, they go out, get this meat, and then, you know, sell. So there is a movement of bush meat from one part of the country to another. And of course, you know, the way they prepare it, most times they only roast it. It is not cooked, it is not fried, it is only roasted. So the possibility that, you know, that process is not well done so much as to take care of the viruses that may be in inside of
right.
these rats.
So you're saying there's a risk that there could be other viruses that jump, you know, that cross into the human host and then sort of start to perpetuate.
Yeah, this scenario, as was revealed in the Wuhan market, is something that we need to thoroughly study here in country, right? Because our interaction with the animals here is not only is not because we use them as pets or we keep them as domestics, but we also use them as meat. Understand? So that so that has put us in a complex situation that some of these emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases, they seem to be flourishing and, you know, coming out from Africa. The other time I made a presentation somewhere and I dug deep to find out, you know, the genesis of some of the infectious disease that has ravaged, you know, mankind, especially in the past, you know, few years. And whether you are talking about monkeypox, whether you are talking about HIV, whether you are talking about the Ebola, whether you are talking about meningitis type C, whether you are talking about Lassa fever, all of these ones, they were found to have originated from Africa. Right, so it is not unconnected with, you know, some of these practices. And, you know, because of our infrastructure here in terms of diagnosis and surveillance, we are always very slow
right.
in detecting some of those things. Let me tell you, if in as much as we say that coronavirus developed from China, you know, and all of that. If China was not equipped so much as to rise to the responsibility of, you know, do a case detection, do an investigation, we possibly would have missed that. Some of us were even feeling that it is possible that disease had been in Africa and, you know, just made a showing.
I think that would be a long shot.
Well, it may have been here. It may have been here in a more mild, as in milder form, right? It may have been here in a milder form. The reason we are also making such, you know, postulation is that, you know, the rate of mortalities, the rate of infection of COVID in Nigeria is not as high as what you see, you know, in Europe, in Asia, and all of that. So we are feeling that it may have visited us in a milder form, and somehow there was a development of some form of herd immunity that has now come to help us out at this, you know, critical time.
I want to now quickly touch on, what do you think is the future, you know, with COVID, with Lassa fever, with pretty much any infectious disease? After COVID, how do you think countries will look at their infectious disease burden? Do you think they're better equipped to handle it? Do you think we've actually reversed some of the progress we've made in the, you know, past years?
Yeah, so to me, COVID has changed a lot of things for us as a country and the world as a whole. Now, COVID came, especially for us in Africa, we were not prepared for it. We kept learning and, you know, making new protocols every now and then. But this far that we have come, just like I stated, the interest of people now in public health and infectious diseases is high. I have seen a lot of colleagues, you know, quickly going to update their skills on molecular diagnosis, updating their skills in issues of vaccinology, you know, and all other aspects. And beside that, the government has also seen that there is need for investment in the health sector. And yes, we have heard promises here and there saying they will revive the vaccine production labs, you know, and all of that. But very importantly is the fact that we now have at our disposal many of such laboratory infrastructure that will help us, you know, in research and development going forward. So, as much as I am not going to say COVID is going to be the last pandemic perhaps the world is going to see, definitely other diseases are still going to come. You know, even if COVID is dealt with, other diseases are still going to come. But then I am pretty sure that the response is going to be much smarter than what we have seen in terms of COVID.
Thank you for your insights, Solomon. I think a lot of us are better informed after having heard you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.